Let me run this by my lawyer is a really helpful phrase to have in your back pocket. Legal Shield has been giving legal peace of mind for over 50 years. They connect you to a vetted law firm in your state for an affordable monthly fee. Want an experienced set of eyes on a contract's fine print, or you finally want to get that will done? Legal Shield has a dedicated group of lawyers who have your back, no matter what the future brings. Sign up today at LegalShield.com/iHeart. PPLSI does not provide legal representation or advice. See a plan for complete terms.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Bissell Pluma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
Hey, everyone. It's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for up to half the cost. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Savings based on cost of Consumer Cellular single line 1, 5, and 10 gig data plans with unlimited talk and text compared to lowest cost single line postpaid unlimited talk, text, and data plans offered by T-Mobile and Verizon January 2024.
Hey, Ken, did you know that gold is the only currency that's held its value since the dawn of money?
Well, I did. Thanks to our friends at Legacy Precious Metals, the most trusted name in gold investing.
Investing in gold protects you against inflation and gives you a hedge against stock market volatility.
Don't leave your retirement to chance. Call Legacy Precious Metals today at 866-691-2173.
Or download your free investor's guide now at buylegacygold.com. That's buylegacygold.com.
When it comes to a thriving career, everyone could use a little support, especially when it comes to transitions. At LHH, we're committed to personalized support, insights, and resources that lead to more job opportunities. No matter what role a professional has in your organization, our services offer an experience that fits each individual. And for organizations, LHH provides consultative support and guidance through the entire outplacement or career transition process. It's outplacement reimagined. Visit LHHtalent.com. Today.
Well, on Friday, we spent a significant amount of time on the show because it was the first inside look we got as to why the recall of the LA County District Attorney George Gascon was a failure with the signatures turned in to the LA County Registrar of Voters. We got that word last Monday, and a couple of days, well, actually the same day, we learned why signatures were rejected. And a big number, over 88,000, were simply not registered to vote. We were expecting a problem maybe with the signature matching. In fact, I think so was the recall campaign. They were already lined up a challenge to that. But a lot of signatures were rejected simply because of duplicates, or a person wasn't registered to vote, or they were an out-of-county voter. So we then found on Friday a story at redstate.com by Jennifer Van Laar. Exclusive: Recall Gascon Committee knowingly turned in invalid petition signatures, misled donors and volunteers. And the author of this article talked to whistleblowers and insiders and even provided pictures of some of the petition signatures that were rejected by the LA County Registrar of Voters, most notably people who said they lived in Mendocino, Berkeley, Del Mar, even supposedly one in Pryor, Oklahoma. Those were submitted to Dean Logan's office, when clearly they're not LA County registered voters, if that's what they're putting as their address.
All right, we're going to go now to Tim Leinberger. He's one of the officials with the George Gascon recall operation. Tim, you there?
Hey, guys. Yes, I'm here, and thanks for the opportunity to respond to some of that, because we believe much of it was demonstrably false. So,
well, tell me this, though. Before they announced you fell short, at any point did you feel like you were going to miss?
The entire time, guys, we thought this would be extremely close. And that was something that we all discussed publicly on the air together numerous times. And there was not one single day that we did not press urgency with this effort or say that we needed to get as far above that cushion as possible.
But so if
Yeah,
they threw out 195,000 signatures, and you and Steve Cooley and others repeatedly assured us that you had a lot of money for a vetting operation. Everything was getting vetted. How could you miss by 195,000? Why would it be close? You had well over 700,000. You did all the vetting, so you said. You had the money, so you said. How could you possibly miss by this much?
Well, first of all, we were, of course, vetting the signatures as we went through them. But obviously, we could not have got through every single signature by submission day, including and especially the signatures that were coming in at the very end. We collected over 150,000 from mid-June to early July. So as you're trying to collect those and verify them throughout that process, you're inherently not going to be able to get to all of them. That would have been impossible. And that's the whole reason for trying to get a 20 to 30% cushion. Ultimately, we got about a 25% cushion. Obviously, we would have loved to have gotten more. We were prepared to pay for additional signatures at the end had our paid guys been able to turn them in.
Why were the numbers lagging up until mid-June? You said you had 150,000 come in the final, I guess, 3 weeks or so. Why was that? We didn't get any sense from any of you guys that the signature gathering was slow. Every time you came you said everything was going
what? Yeah. I said, I don't think they were lagging at all. I think we were at 566,000 raw signatures in mid-June, which is exactly what we announced. And then we went on to continue to up that and increase our momentum.
Up until mid-June, you were vetting signatures.
So we were vetting signatures throughout our process, yes.
Okay. So,
but clearly in the push at the end, not so much.
You couldn't get through the entire batch, but I can assure you, even if you look at the petitions that Jennifer posted in her article there, there are signatures that are crossed out. So it completely debunks the assertion that we weren't doing that.
Yeah, I know, but this is getting confusing here. What was your vetting rate up until the middle of June? You must have missed a lot of bad signatures leading up to mid-June. Not all the 150,000 that came in the last 3 weeks were thrown out. You must have had a pretty high fail rate up to that point.
There was a significant portion of signatures that were vetted on the front end and tossed out early. Otherwise, our entire submission would have been higher and the invalidation rate would have been greater. So again, it's an extremely difficult process. And just to put it into perspective
Why were you so short?
I guess I don't think we were. We had collected 566,000 raw signatures. I think that's as many as we physically could have possibly collected within that time span, given the time limit and threshold. By comparison, for example, if you look at the California gubernatorial recall, they collected 200 and something thousand total from LA County in 280 days because they got an extension for COVID. So again, we were way beyond that threshold and pace. So I think just framing it as short or coming up where we were wouldn't be correct.
Well, it's not framing. Wait, hold on. This isn't framing. Yeah. You either had enough or you didn't. And in the end, you're 40,000 short, and you had no sense that you were going to be 40,000 short. See, you're accusing Jennifer Van Laar of having a contradictory story. You were all confident you had enough.
We said it was going to be close, and we needed to build as large of a cushion as possible. And that was the exact statement I made repeatedly on the air with you guys. You can check the tapes and in all of our public statements. So we never said we had it in the bag. That's why we continued to urge collection through the last day, because we always knew it could be close. And in addition to that, there is still a process that remains for this where we're going to be allowed to inspect those signatures and make sure that nobody was improperly disenfranchised. I'd like to make a quick point about that, but just on its face, there's 32,000 signatures alone that the registrar has disqualified that they themselves say are valid signatures from LA County voters for whatever reason have something misprinted or a different address from where they're currently registered at. So we believe that could be potentially ripe for challenge, and we're going to be looking at everything else as well. So the idea that this wasn't exactly as close as we thought it would be or that we were saying anything different is just revisionist history, in my opinion. And
one of the last conversations we had was an attorney for your recall campaign, and it sounded like you guys were preparing for a battle of the signature matching. That turned out to be not really significant in the rejection of the recall. It was about all these unregistered voters and out-of-state voters and duplicates. Again, isn't that something you could have caught?
Yeah. Well, we were doing our best to catch those, like I said, throughout, and we did cross out a significant number of duplicates on our own. So that was absolutely occurring. Otherwise, we wouldn't have ended up with 520,000 valid signatures in the end. So we were absolutely looking to do that. And as to the signature verification issue, again, I think the idea that we shouldn't have raised that as a potential issue just doesn't make sense. It would have been negligent on our part not to.
No, but it was we had her on. It was like a half an hour on that, and that ended up being less than 10% of the problem. The huge problem, two-thirds of the problem, is not registered voters and duplicates. And then you could add in another 30,000 different addresses, as you mentioned. I mean, by themselves there, that's 160,000. Signatures, 160,000 out of 195,000 thrown out. It seems to me that is the easy stuff to verify. They're not registered, duplicates, different address. That's all a matter of public record. So if I don't understand, why did you get such a surge in the last 3 weeks, and why weren't you prepared for such a surge? What went on that the last 3 weeks created this big surge?
Because we continued to pour resources into the effort, up our paid signature gathering, and our volunteer activity increased as well, as people were just continuing to watch everything that George Gascon was doing in the city. So I think it's just, again, the idea that you wouldn't end up with a 20 to 30% range of invalid signatures, which is pretty standard for this effort, is just kind of a false premise.
Yeah, but you did. See, the thing is, you did the vetting. So you shouldn't end up with a 27% rejection rate. And you did do vetting on most of the signatures, the first 550,000. You did the vetting. Now, shouldn't we expect a very high rate of proper signatures if you're really spending all that money?
Yeah, and I think that's why, again, we got 520,000 valid signatures, which is a pretty high rate. And at the same time, we do believe there are potential challenges for those other signatures. So this is right in line with any standard recall for where you would be in terms of overages. And we were absolutely crossing out those names and vetting hundreds of thousands of signatures. Otherwise, the submission would have been even greater and had a much more significant rate of rejection. So, like, I talked to some of our campaign people.
I know, but that's like a coach saying, "Yeah, we lost, but we could have lost by more." I mean, in the end, it's a loss, and you know, our listeners, they donated money, they put in a lot of volunteer effort here. I mean, to say, "Hey, we had a good game, though." I mean, that really doesn't cut it. George Gascon's killing people.
Well, that's not what I'm saying at all, guys. Obviously, there's nobody more disappointed than me, and then our team who put in a lot of sleepless nights and long days to make this happen for the better part of the last 2 years. And like I said, this is somewhat of a premature conversation because we will be looking at those signatures. But the idea that we didn't do everything we possibly could to collect every last signature and to verify everyone that we could is just totally false on its face. And it doesn't line up with any facts that are available, even if you look at some of our campaign expenses and reports, because some of the insinuations that Jennifer made or that we were negligent with the money or doing things out of cronyism. Our total overhead and expenses, salary, legal, everything was less than 9% for the whole campaign. That's unheard of. Our signature collection rate was around $11 net, which is way below the national average of 14.5. So the idea that we weren't doing everything we could.
Can you hang on?
We got one comment that you guys went on the cheap. All right, we're talking to Tim Leinberger. Tim was a spokesman for the Recall George Gascon campaign, which, of course, a week ago today we found out has failed to qualify enough signatures to get on the ballot. And a couple of articles written about the recall effort were pretty critical, particularly about the vetting process, since many signatures were rejected for simply not being registered voters or for being out of state or being duplicates. We got more coming up.
John and Ken, KFI.
All right, we're talking to Tim Leinberger. He was on our show quite a few times during the effort to recall George Gascon. He was with the George Gascon recall campaign. And of course, we found out a week ago that they didn't have enough signatures to qualify this for the ballot. And then when we found out the reasons, we were a bit perplexed because everyone thought it was going to be about signature matching. Well, that was only about 10,000 signatures disqualified. The bulk of the signatures thrown out were not registered voters or duplicates or out-of-county people. And that kind of surprised us here at the John and Ken Show and lead us to many questions over the vetting process to make sure that these signatures weren't turned in. And what we found out is that the cushion period, after they announced they had enough signatures to qualify this for the ballot, the next thing they had to do was get a cushion of signatures to try to cover those that would be thrown out And it looks like a lot of those apparently didn't qualify.
So Tim, I spoke with somebody a week or two, maybe a week after the deadline for returning the signatures. And this person had gone out collecting signatures. He put in a lot of long hours. And he was well-connected in government. You probably would know his name, but I'm not going to say. And sure. I asked him, and I said, do you think this is going to make it? And this is before we even had the sample. He goes, no. He goes. It was just amateur hour over there. They were panicking. He goes, I went out all 4th of July weekend, and I was doing it 14, 16 hours a day because everybody was panicking. They thought they were going to be short. That's what he told me. I also, to be honest, I felt like the lawyer that we had on in the final days saying, hey, you know, they've got the wrong signature matching.
It's a training manual from 2017.
Right? I felt like that was, hey, look over here. That, you know, you set a smoke bomb off in the other direction so Dean Logan could get blamed rather than having somebody come on in the air and explain what was going on behind the scenes, that you were falling short. I felt like it was like, damage control in advance, getting ahead of the story, getting ahead of the spin. That's the way I feel.
Sure, yeah. Can I respond to both of those points,
yeah.
I guess, one at a time?
Yeah.
So I guess in terms of the signature, or we'll start with the idea that there was panic at the end or we did or didn't think we were going to make it. Again, there wasn't one day where I didn't go out and tell people that we needed to be urgent, we could not be complacent, or that we would fail. And that message was continuous throughout the entire effort. And we always believed that it was going to be close and that we needed to build as big of a cushion as possible. So going back and saying, you know, oh, we were panicking or trying to get every last thing in, of course we were. We would have loved to turn in a million signatures if we could have and had 400,000 be disqualified. We would have been happy with that if it ultimately qualified. So absolutely, that's the case, but that's not news. That's exactly what I was telling everybody and what our campaign was telling everybody. This is urgent, and this is a very difficult threshold to qualify. We can't be complacent. To the second point about the signature gathering, I think that was an extremely legitimate issue to raise. It also goes against the narrative that we weren't being diligent with everything about this process. And ultimately, if you just take that number alone, it wouldn't be enough to change the results. But again, we're going to look at everything. And that number still, as it stands today, was 75% higher than the average rejection rate for the last recall for Newsom or for vote by mail. So while it wouldn't make the difference on its own, it could be a portion of it. And when we're looking at 32,000 other signatures we believe may have been disenfranchised, that could matter. So the idea that we shouldn't be raising every possible legitimate question, I think that would have been negligent, and we in fact did the opposite.
So I'm looking at this story. Let the voters decide. That's the company that was hired to collect signatures?
Yeah, one of the companies, yes.
And this C3 Public Strategies, they were supposed to vet the signatures? Is that what was going on?
That was one of the companies that also participated in the vetting. Yeah, we used a number of different vendors for both tasks.
And something else called Allied Data?
Yep, that was another one.
Did they do their jobs properly?
At times, I would say not always. We did our best to always hold our vendors accountable. Sometimes you have paid guys that would say they were going to turn in a certain amount by a certain day, and you'd agree to it, and then that submission would end up being short. So you'd have to hold them accountable. We constantly work to renegotiate rates. We switch vendors as necessary. We did
because
everything
it says here Allied Data was supposed to weed out people who weren't registered to vote. Duplicates, address mismatches.
These are the things that got into
trouble. You
know,
that's 170,000 signatures right there that they were supposed to weed out of the system. Did they?
I don't think they did all of our verification. I believe we pulled it from them at some point.
And you pulled
so
it from you pulled it from C3 as well, because it says here you switched from C3 to Allied Data.
Yeah, that's correct.
So is this
a lot of this in under our own hands or
I guess the real question is, did you have anybody doing this with the cushion signatures? Because that was where the problem came in, it sounds like.
Yeah, so we continued to do it. So just to be clear, yeah, we continued to do it throughout the process, but we did not get through, obviously, the entire 720,000 that we or 715,000 that we submitted. I think it was close to about 80%.
And you do know that the head of Let the Voters Decide called the campaign amateur, too. You saw that story?
Yeah, of course I did. And I think we're not really commenting on that publicly because we don't want to litigate it over the air.
There's a lawsuit there.
We're confident we'll prevail.
All right. And we got,
I want to ask you this finally, Tim. Yeah. You've been hinting around that there might be some sort of challenge to this outcome. Is there anything to be said about that right now?
Yeah, so the way the process works is we have 21 days to initiate a challenge with the registrar. We're in the process of doing that and gathering together a team of volunteers and attorneys to go in there and review everything. So we'll be notifying them soon of who that'll be. We're then going to do our best to review every single signature, make sure nobody was disenfranchised in the end. And again, just on its face, we think that 32,000 is potentially problematic because those are actual LA County voters with legitimate signatures who are not having their signature counted as it stands. So that alone would put us at 552. We think there's potential equal protection issues there, according to some constitutional attorneys we've talked to. So we're going to do everything we can to continue fighting for the removal of George Gascón. And I know people are frustrated, and I know there's Monday morning quarterbacking going on this effort. But one thing I just want to get across to you guys and your listeners is there's virtually nothing we didn't do under the sun to make this happen. It was an extremely high and difficult threshold. Just on the verification alone, the registrar required 400 to 500 employees just to get that element done in 30 days. So the idea that this was some easy task or wasn't going to be close was never the case. So we're going to continue working hard at this. And I think, you know, some of this stuff is just part of the nature of politics, and we get that.
All right, Tim, thanks for talking to us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, guys, for your time. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks for coming
Tim
on.
Tim Weinberger used to be a spokesperson for the recall, I guess he still is, George Gascón campaign. More coming up.
John and Kent, KFI.
Well, we did just got a news release from the office of the governor. And as we seem to read it here at the John and Kent Show, there's some confusion on my part. It looks like he has vetoed the safe injection site bill for drug users.
Yes, but he worded it strangely.
I know. I'm returning Senate Bill 57 without my signature, which part of me take that to mean that he's just not going to sign it or veto it, and then it takes effect.
Well, that's the law, but I don't think that's what he meant.
Is that the verbiage you use when you're vetoing? You say, I'm
no, you should say I'm vetoing it.
You should have a big stamp, veto.
Right. Just say Senate Bill 57 has been vetoed. I am vetoing Senate Bill 57. But he doesn't. Why use five words when you could use 12? You know, because the whole message is he doesn't think allowing public injection sites of hard drugs like heroin is a beautiful thing.
Well, who does?
Right. Well, apparently the legislature does.
I don't know if they use the word beautiful thing.
They'd be handing out needles in L.A. and San Francisco. And what's the other city?
Oakland.
Of course, Oakland. How could I forget? Yeah, those three cities would have public injection sites for heroin. And the city provides the needles and provides the Narcan after the overdose to try to get you back.
The idea is so you don't die, right? We're there to watch you so you don't die.
We're going
to
work that hard on this crowd? Really?
It is amazing. Like we've said for years, when you normalize the behavior, now you're left with, well, now we got to try to save your life. You got to do what you got to do, but we'll stand by so you don't die.
But we got to do this every week for the rest of their lives?
Well, there'll be a rotation of people. Some will die anyway. New ones will come in.
I mean, wow. We're actually.
And I would say that if you're a lifetime drug injection user, you're probably going to die young.
Well, they have either from
the drugs or from some other ailment.
But they have a lifetime nanny. We're going to have a whole state agency to try to keep you going.
Yeah, I don't think there's a limit on how many times or how many years you can come in.
I'm saying, here, we'll give you the free needles, and we'll be standing there to revive you. You just have to buy your own cheap heroin, and let's go. And it's like, this is our job now. This is the government's job. Is to keep people who are driving suicide planes and try to pick up the pieces after they crash? Why?
He wrote the unlimited number of safe injection sites that this bill would authorize, facilities which could exist well into the latter part of the decade, could induce a world of unintended consequence. It's possible that these sites would help improve the safety and health of our urban areas, but if done without a strong plan, that could work against the purpose.
Do you believe this? When I first heard the bill, I thought maybe they were going to do one injection site in a city, they're going to have unlimited number of sites, unlimited number.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. These are pilot programs in these three cities, but I didn't know it wasn't limited.
Of course, because nobody
could be right. There might be one in your neighborhood.
Because they don't report on this. That should be the headline, but except we don't have any media anymore. The headline should be unlimited drug injection sites approved by the legislature. Why wasn't that the lead story for a month? You could completely destroy every part of every city with this.
And we talked about this last hour, and of course, the political angle is he doesn't want to be known as Governor Heroin. Because if he signed the bill, that stamp could be put on him by opponents if he's going to run for president in 2024.
He wants to run and become President Heroin.
Doesn't South America have one of those? Isn't there already a President Heroin somewhere in the world?
I think the Mexican
President. Heroin.
Yeah. Heroin.
Yeah, he writes, we should strive to ensure innovative efforts are well planned. And he's instructing the Secretary of Health and Human Services to convene city and county officials. Oh, this is typical Newsom. Let's have discussions and roundtables and task forces to come up with a sustainable and safe overdose prevention program.
Safe and sustainable overdose prevention.
Yeah.
Well, no. If you're handing out free needles, you're never going to get that. I mean, he even admits it. He says worsening drug consumption is not a risk we can take. Well, he's admitted that if you just put out injection sites, you're just going to get more people showing up for the free needles. Because that's the hardest thing when it comes to being addicted to heroin is getting new clean needles, because they get dirty and then you end up getting infections and HIV and all that. Yeah. Hepatitis. And if the heroin doesn't kill you, the infections will.
By the way, New York already has these. And I'm looking at an article on this. Apparently they did put them in Manhattan's Upper East Harlem and Washington Heights neighborhoods. They claim they've halted more than 150 overdoses during more than 9,500 visits. Many of them, though, repeat visits from some 800 people.
Okay.
So it's like the same people just go.
When you inject heroin, basically you end up flat out on the ground, right? You're close to unresponsive. What's the difference between living like that and being dead? As a practical matter,
if eventually heroin makes you feel good. You have some great, you have a good trip.
But you drift off.
What's the difference between that and playing a video game or watching a movie and escape?
Because you're conscious during the video game.
No, barely. Some people are so absorbed, it wouldn't seem that way.
Sometimes people die playing video games. You ever see those guys? Usually happens in Asia. They'll get some guy who's up like 11 days in a row, never slept, playing a video game, and eventually he has a heart attack. And he's 23 and he drops dead in front of the console.
This article I'm reading was against this bill, and it's saying that California does not have high-quality, affordable drug treatment facilities.
Clearly.
Which may be true, because a lot of times you see the ads for these places. Remember how many of them sprung up in like Orange County? And some of them were expensive.
Because they were fake.
But you can get state money to pay for it.
Yes, you can, but they were fake. Remember they would drain...
Yeah, we drain the bank accounts, and then they dump them in the street and make them homeless.
Apparently, insurance would cover it for 30 days. In fact, people were moving to California, becoming residents, getting on the state Obamacare system.
Oh, yeah, they ran ads in those states to try to draw them. Come to sunny Southern California and kick your drug problem.
Right, and sign up for our local Obamacare, and you get 30 days of drug rehab. You go sit in a nice house in Orange County. They take your 30 days worth of money, and they kick you back out. And there's guys on the street. We're not making this up. They had a whole long story about it. There's guys on the street to sell you drugs as soon as you leave the rehab.
Right.
Immediately. Because they know, the drug pushers know that it's all scam, that nobody gets rehabilitated. I hate that word. Nobody.
Nobody.
It's just an elaborate way to loot government money, because that's what it is. It's Obamacare money, right?
Right.
So it's probably federal money sent to the state, blah, blah, blah. And
all right, if you're just tuning in, as we understand it, Newsom has vetoed the Senate Bill 57, which would have allowed these safe injection sites in Los Angeles, San Francisco, and Oakland. And I'm reading that this would have run unchallenged through 2028. That's what he meant by the latter part of the decade. The pilot program allows these, once if this bill had been signed, to go for 6 years.
Every time you think we've hit rock bottom in terms of some dangerous public policy that'll further destroy the cities, the legislature comes up with something else.
Right.
Open-air drug bazaars that we would pay for. We would pay for the needles. We would pay for the needles that inject the heroin that create all these homeless monsters and ghouls that crawl around the city.
They just put out a press release. He signed, like, wow, it must be 20 bills here. And then the one veto is Senate Bill 57. So it was indeed a veto.
Yeah, well.
I have to take a look at this list of...
There's an upside to it. Yeah. Oh, there's probably 20 horrible things that he signed.
Oh, I'm sure there is. I'm just reading the title, so I couldn't tell you off the top of my head here how bad these bills are.
Yeah, but the veto provides a distraction. See, he's not so bad, all right? You guys think he's bad. He's not that bad.
Yeah, this one got a lot of attention, this injection bill.
Well, that is civilization destroying. You might as well drop a nuclear bomb on some of the neighborhoods that these injection sites were going to be set up in. John and Ken, KFI. Hello?
Hi, how are you?
Hey.
I'm just chatting with Steve Gregory. It's about work stuff.
Oh, wow.
I know.
Wish I had a recording of that.
No, it is work stuff. I mean, what else would it be?
A lot of wisdom there.
All right, coming up after 4 o'clock, another super celebrity phony when it comes to climate change. This is a person who spoke strongly just a few years ago about how people should keep an eye on their carbon footprints. And what do you know? Their private jet has burned more than $116,000 worth of jet fuel in just 2 months. We'll tell you who that is. We'll also talk about Germany. The New York Post wrote an excellent editorial about the problem with Germany trying to go green and the lessons for the United States and all the people that are rushing to...
The German government is in a full-scale panic. I mean, an absolute panic. And we'll explain to you what they're doing, because they're taking all kinds of emergency procedures that they had severely denounced just a few months ago.
Because reality set in.
Yeah.
Because you want to go green and think you're going green doesn't mean you're going to end up that way. We are still living in a world that is powered by a lot of fossil fuels. And
Germany is now saying F the climate.
Because it's more important to keep people's power on and to keep their industry going, particularly their car manufacturing, everything else that drives that country.
Yeah, and you need heat. You need heat in that cold German winter.
Yeah, that's coming up. You're right. It's almost the end of summer already. So we'll get into all of these stories. We're going to talk about space right now. This is a story that's making the rounds. They actually had released this a couple of months ago, but it got renewed attention over the weekend. NASA has captured the sound waves of a black hole. And it was long thought that black holes don't really make any kind of sound because it's a vacuum situation.
They suck in the sound, yeah.
But NASA captured these sound waves more than 200 million light years away from us. The black hole is found in the center of what's known as the Perseus Galaxy Cluster, which apparently is an 11 million light-year wide bundle of galaxies shrouded by hot gas.
How cool is that?
Yes. So it's a giant gas cloud. And that's how scientists were able to capture the sound. Now, the only thing about this, and we're going to play it, is that they had to do a little... human ears couldn't pick up this. So they scaled the sound in a way that you could hear what a black hole sounds like. So in other words, they had to sort of adapt it for the human ear. And what they put out is about 20, 30 seconds worth. Here is that sound.
I want folks to know we are taking a new strategy.
No.
Taking
what is this?
Accountability across the spectrum. And it's not just, as the doctor said, Gally, it's not just...
Well, you wanted a black hole.
Oh, that was your joke. You put that in there?
He told me before the show started.
Wow, he tricked me this time. Do we have the actual sound, or is that the actual thing? No.
That's the sound inside Newsom's head.
It sounds like an eerie echo chamber,
I guess it's sucking the universe in.
Right.
So it's like almost like a toilet, you know, the sucking sound.
You're right. It does sound like that. The NASA tweet said the misconception that there is no sound in space originates because most space is a vacuum, providing no way for sound waves to travel. A galaxy cluster has so much gas that we picked up actual sound. Here it is amplified and mixed with other data to hear a black hole. You know what? Actually, I would have gotten that, except we were just talking about Newsom, and I thought you were going to playing his veto message for the drug injection bill.
No.
It was weird that these two topics kind of crossed over so close together. If we had talked about this an hour ago, or an hour from now, I probably would not have been confused. These sound waves are being heard 144 quadrillion and 288 quadrillion times higher than their original frequency. Well, that would be a distortion, wouldn't it?
Yeah, nobody can calculate what that means.
No, exactly.
You start talking about quadrillions.
Yeah, so they definitely amplified the sound clip so that the human ear could pick up something.
But it's the black hole is nothingness. It sucks everything in and compresses it down.
Is that ultimately our end point?
Yeah, we're all going to end up in a black hole.
Yeah, all right. Well, you know.
I think we're in one already.
I was just going to say the exact same thing.
Wow.
We're so cheery.
We got more coming up.
John and Ken Show. Deborah Marquez, the news. KFI AM 640. It's never been more important to diversify your financial portfolio.
Well, that's right. The S&P is down 20% from the last year, and this year looks even worse.
Gold and precious metals offer a hedge against inflation and stock market volatility. And Legacy Precious Metals is the company Ken and I trust.
Protect your retirement account by rolling it into a gold-backed IRA or have metals shipped directly to your door.
Call our friends at Legacy Precious Metals today at 866-691-2173.
Or visit buylegacygold.com.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists, like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, and Two Door Cinema Club.
Let me just run this by my lawyer is a really helpful phrase to have in your back pocket. Legal Shield has been giving legal peace of mind for over 50 years. They connect you to a vetted law firm in your state for an affordable monthly fee. Want an experienced set of eyes on a contract's fine print? Or you finally want to get that will done? Legal Shield has a dedicated group of lawyers who have your back, no matter what the future brings. Sign up today at LegalShield.com/iHeart. PPLSI does not provide legal representation or advice. See a plan for complete terms.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.